Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins, and our special guest today is William J. Federer. Mr. Federer is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of AmeriSearch Incorporated, which is a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. Bill also has a radio broadcast, The American Minute, which is a daily broadcast across America and over the Internet. And he has his Faith in History television airs on the TCT network on stations all across America. And he's a former U.S. congressional candidate, and he's appeared on many of the well-known national news channels. And we're very fortunate to have him here. I recently attended the God and Country Christian Alliance yearly banquet, and Bill was the speaker there. And he so impressed everybody. They were in awe how he spoke for over an hour with no notes. He really knows his subject matter. And so we're going to jump right in. And Bill, how are you?
Hey, it's great to be with you, Rick.
Well, it's good to have you with us again. I've been receiving your newsletter, American Minute, for years. And I can't remember how far back it was, but it's a daily thing you put out every day. And it's all relevant to our history, and it's very interesting. So I urge people to subscribe to that also. What amazed me and most of the people in attendance the other night was how you were outlining where it came from your book, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to Present. And you talked about socialism and how it came about. And what was so interesting is how it parallels so much of the things we've gone through recently and are going through today. So I want to start out with number one, the chapter one, the dream. Socialism will solve the world's problems. There will be free health care, free education, free food, free housing, free public transportation, free child care, guaranteed jobs, paid vacations, and free welfare for all the poor. And that's one of the things we seem to have already accomplished today.
Yeah. Well, the most common form of government in world history is kings. And Nimrod, Pharaoh, Caesar, Kaiser, Sultan, Tsar, Napoleon. And as the centuries go on, the kingdoms get bigger because with military advancements, kings can kill more people. And with technological advancements, kings can track more people. Until finally, the King of England had the biggest kingdom that the planet Earth had ever seen. The sun never set on the British Empire. He had Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong, British Guiana, Canada, Barbados, Bermuda, Jamaica, India, a quarter of the world's population right there, and America. And so the King of England was a globalist. He was a one-world government guy, sort of like a Klaus Schwab, George Soros, right?
Right.
With him at the top. And America's founders decided they didn't like this globalist king telling us what to do, so they broke away and flipped it and made the people the king. And so the word citizen is Greek. It means co-ruler, co-sovereign, co-king. So you're a citizen of America. You are a co-king of America. A republic is where the people are king, ruling through their representatives. So democracy, a pure democracy, every citizen has to be at every meeting every day to talk about every issue. And that's what they had in Athens, 6,000 citizens, and they had to gather in the Agora marketplace to make discussions as to what's going to happen in their city. Totally time-consuming. You didn't have time for anything else. Every single day you had to be there. What are we talking about today? What are we talking about? And if you didn't show up for a couple of days, you didn't know what the topic was. You were called an idiotus, an idiot. And but a republic is where you take care of your family and your farm, and you have someone in your place that goes to the market every day. They are your representative. And so either way, democracies and republics, the people, the citizens are the king. With republics, the people are ruling through their representatives.
Right.
Now, Now, I bring that background in because if the most common form of government's kings, and democracies and republics are attempts to take the power of the king and give it to the people, what if the king wants the power back? Does he just ask for it? Hi, I want to be the king. Give me control of your life. Oh, yeah, here you go. People aren't really in a hurry to do that. And so there's two ways in which kings can take the power back: fear and free stuff. Fear, when people are afraid, they will trade freedom for security. They'll panic, and they'll want somebody to come along and to fix it, and they'll, you know, give up their control of their life. And the other is free stuff. The king's so nice, he's giving you free stuff until you get dependent, and then you incrementally give up your freedom to keep the free stuff coming. So like a drug dealer takes over a neighborhood two ways. He can come in with guns and get everybody in fear, and they submit to the mob. Or the drug dealer is so nice, he's giving away free drugs. And then people get hooked, and then he says, you want some more free drugs? You're going to have to give up control of your life and sell yourself into prostitution. And so there's sort of a front door, back door approach. But I bring that out because...
it's a great analogy of where we're at today.
Yeah. And so socialism is basically a bait and switch for a dictatorship.
Right.
And that's not my words. It's Lenin's. Socialism is a transition phase from capitalism to communism. Capitalism empowering the individual and communism empowering the state. And one of the reasons I go back to Plato is he's the first one that talked about everybody owning everything in common. And it sounds really nice until you think it through. Somebody has to be in the government handing out the common stuff. And they're always going to be tempted to want to funnel a little extra to their family and friends on the side and hold back from someone they don't like. And before you know it, it gets discretionary.
Right.
And the saying is, he who holds the purse strings has the power.
And a lot of our students nowadays probably don't realize that that's been tried before in America. Jamestown is a prime example, I believe, where they tried that form of government, and it failed miserably. The people were starving to death, and we've done it. It doesn't work.
Yeah. One of the things I bring out is that the Pilgrims were a company colony. We always see pictures of the Pilgrims on the Mayflower and they're coming across, and we never ask ourselves the question, who's paying for the boat ride?
Right.
It's like they had to borrow money, and they went to investors in England, and the investors said, we'll loan you the money, but you have to pay us back. And they created the London Company, and it had bylaws. And the London Company bylaws said everything was going to be owned in common. It says all profits and benefits that are got by trade, traffic, trucking, working, fishing, or any other means shall remain still in ye common stock. And all are to have their meat, drink, and apparel and all provision out of ye common stock. So, okay, everything's going to go into this one pot. But the problem was it didn't motivate anybody. And so they almost starved to death.
Right.
And William Bradford, the governor of the Pilgrims, said the failure of that experiment of communal service, which was tried for several years, proves the emptiness of the theory of Plato and other ancients applauded by some of latter times. I think this is amazing that the Pilgrims actually knew that they were trying to live out Plato's perfect society that he imagined, with everybody owning everything equally.
Right.
And William Bradford goes on that the taking away of private property and possession of it in community would make a state happy and flourishing, as if they were wiser than God. He says the young men who were most able and fit for service objected to being forced to spend their time and working for other men's wives and children without recompense. The strong man or the resourceful man had no more share of food, clothes, etc., than the weak man, who was not able to do a quarter what the other could. This was thought injustice. The aged and graver men, who were equalized in labor, food, clothes, with the humbler and younger ones, thought it a disrespect. And then it says, as for men's wives, who were obliged to do service for other men, such as cooking, washing their clothes, etc., they considered it a kind of slavery, and many husbands would not brook it or allow it. He said, let none argue that this is due to human failing rather than to this communistic plan of life in itself. And William Bradford goes on, he says, after much discussion, it was decided that every family would plant corn for his own household. This was very successful. He says, the women now went willingly into the field and took their little ones to plant corn, while before they would allege weakness, and to have compelled them would have been thought great oppression. So the pilgrims tried this, everything owned in common, and they almost starved to death. They scrapped it. They said, look, everybody get your own land, and then you will work hard and, you know, to benefit yourself, and then you will voluntarily feel led to help your neighbor.
It's a shame they don't teach that anymore. Well, Bill, let's jump down to chapter four, because it hammers us with a tolerance every day, or with a term every day, and that's tolerance. Democracy loves tolerance. As Plato explained, democracy, everything is tolerated. And that seems like that's what we're being hammered with constantly.
Yeah, so the Plato, now he's referring to an island of Atlantis. It's a fictitious or legendary island in the Mediterranean that sank in the sea. But Plato, if it did exist, it existed 800 years before Plato. And there is an island in the Mediterranean called Santorini that is the remnant of a volcano. It's just the rim of a volcano. And it's a nice tourist attraction. I went there in college. It's real beautiful. The whole city is along the cliff of this rim, and it's white with blue, you know, roofs. And anyway, when that volcano blew, it would have sent a tsunami across the entire Mediterranean, and it would have wiped out lots of cities. So whether that's it or not. But Plato thought that Atlantis was the ideal structured society, and he keeps looking back to that. And he considered democracy an unstructured society. So he's comparing structured with unstructured. And so he said, in a democracy, the chief characteristic is tolerance. Everybody tolerates each other. It's wonderful. And then they tolerate people that are a little bit off. Then they tolerate people that are a lot off. So finally, they're tolerating lawlessness, and it turns into insecurity for life and property, and it turns into chaos. And then the people begin to say, we need someone to come along and fix this unstructured mess. And that's when some governor comes along and he says, I can fix it. I just need some emergency powers.
Yep.
And Plato says that he begins to concentrate power. And then when people realize he's getting too powerful, they cast it in his teeth, and he has a choice: give up the power, which he's not inclined to do because Plato called him a lover of power, or get rid of the people confronting him. And so he purges his military of anybody that has morals and virtues. All he has is yes men and an enforcement arm, and then he sends them out to destroy his political opponents. And finally, he stands up in the chariot of state holding the reins of power, and he's revealed as a tyrant. And so he basically warns that tyrants, when they first appear above ground, is the way he put it, they're full of smiles and they want to promise everything to everybody. But then when they drop in popularity, and so that's the big warning sign, is that watch out for a leader who drops in popularity, because he's not going to give up power. And if he's afraid that he or his party will be voted out, they don't want to get voted out. So the next thing they're going to do is they're going to militarize themselves, and they're going to use the law enforcement to destroy their political opponents so they can keep their power. And so it's a trend that you see over and over again in history. But Plato said that this philosopher king, this governor, is going to restore order, and then he's going to set himself up as the head of gold, and his administrators as the arms and chest of silver, and together they make up the ruling class, and everyone else is the abdomen of iron and bronze, and they are the ruled class. So socialism is a structured society of a ruling class and a ruled class. And the ruling class, they're above the law. They get to live in the nice houses, right, and in the nice neighborhoods. Why? Because they're the ones that are keeping it from descending into chaos, and so they get to be better off. And then the peasants, the abdomen of iron and bronze, yes, they're all provided for, but nobody owns everything. Everything's owned in common, but it's the ruling class that decides who gets what. So the saying is, he who controls the purse strings has the power.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we're seeing nowadays, folks. And I'm sure you're all aware of it if you have your head out of the sand at all and keeping up with what's going on in our society. Well, Bill, we need to take a break to hear from our sponsors. So we'll come back and continue this conversation after these messages. Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Again, we have Bill Federer with us. Bill is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and we are enjoying the wealth of information and knowledge that he has that he's sharing with us. I want to jump down to Chapter 6, Bill, Promiscuity and Decadence in Our Society. In 1934, Oxford anthropologist J.D. Unwin published his book Sex and Culture, which confirmed the trend described by Plato. And after studying 86 different tribes and civilizations over 5,000 years, Unwin found that sexual promiscuity always preceded the decline of civilization. Folks, that's exactly describing what we've been going through in recent generations. Things that were totally unacceptable 30, 40, 50 years ago are now right out in public in the streets and in the schools and public libraries. Bill, comments on that?
Yeah, so Plato, when he talks about you tolerate each other, it's great. Then you tolerate those that are a little bit off. Then you tolerate those that are a lot off until there's lawlessness. And that's when they cry for a dictator. So he walks you through it. He says the manner of life is that of Democrats. Everyone does what is right in his own eyes, because he's describing a democracy. And he says, at first, the democracy is like a bazaar where you can buy anything, like a marketplace, a piece of embroidery with lots of different colors. But then he says that it creeps into their homes. There's a disrespect. The father gets accustomed to descending to the level of his son and fear him, and the son having no fear of his parents. And then it gets into their classroom, and the teacher fears and flatters his students, and the students despise their masters and tutors. And then it gets into their handling of finances, and they are democracy, so they vote to spread the money from the city treasury around, and the treasury is empty. Then they vote to take the money from the rich people. Now there's no rich people left. And then it gets into their private morality. And he says the young man passes into libertinism of useless and unnecessary pleasures. There's no conceivable folly or crime, not accepting incest or any other unnatural union. He's part of company with all shame. So he's talking about this sexual promiscuity always precedes the collapse of a civilization. And J.D. Unwin says that civilizations have a life cycle, very much like a plant. You plant the seed, and then it's a little sprout, and then it grows into a sapling, and then it finally becomes a full tree bearing apples, and then it gets old and rotten and worm-eaten, and it ends up, you know, collapsing in a storm. Right. And so He says that when democracies or civilizations are young, they go usually through a period of pain and poverty. So you have a people that go through a war, go through a famine, and then they work hard and they work together and they become patriotic and they climb out of their problem, and then they become productive and their goal is to become prosperous. And then finally they achieve it and they're prosperous, and then they decide they want to get pleasure focused, and they get focused on promiscuity and indulgence, and they become undisciplined, lawless, and weakened, and then conquered by the next rising civilization.
Right.
So it's like when an athlete is young, he's focused, he's disciplined, he wants that championship, and he works hard, and finally he wins it, and he is the champ for a couple seasons. And then he gets a little lazy, eats some fatty foods, doesn't exercise as much, and in his mind, he still thinks he's the tough guy. But he goes into the ring of competition and gets the tar knocked out of him because in reality, he's a couch potato. And so he said civilizations do this, right? They'll go really big, and then they'll become a world, you know, powerful empire, but then they end up getting in debt. Debt is fat to the body politic, right? And then they end up getting immoral, and they want to enjoy. They want to get pleasure-focused. And J.D. Unwin even calls it a sexual marketplace. He says, when women as a whole say nothing happens unless there's a commitment, the guys say, okay, they make the commitment, then they go out and work hard for their wife, and then little kids appear, and then the guy has another emotion. It's called being protective.
Right.
And when all the guys in the country are being productive and protective for their wives and families, rising water floats all boats. The whole country becomes protective. Expansionistic, creative, innovative, even militaristic, and it's growing and growing. But when the women as a whole say there does not need to be a commitment, water seeks its own level. You have a bunch of guys saying, okay, pleasure time, I'm going to have fun, and they end up getting selfish.
Yeah.
And there's fewer kids born to fill the ranks of the military. And when enough men do this, the country gets weakened, and then it gets conquered by the next rising civilization. And he says this is your... And 80 different major civilizations, he saw this trend. And he went so far as to say it's irreversible. Once a nation goes down, this pleasure-focused, indulgent, casting off of restraints, yielding to sexual passions, that the human nature wants pleasure. And so it's like really hard to put it back in a cage. It's like it's a snowball that gains momentum. It's like, hey, unrestrained sex, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger until the whole country is weakened, and then they're conquered by the next rising civilization.
Right, which you talk about in the next chapter, 7, loss of morals and courage. You talk about unrestrained immigration is followed by outright invasion. That's what's going on today, and we will be conquered because of it.
Yeah, I mean, you contrast here we are. We have the military focusing on what pronouns to use. And how do you feel today? Do you feel like you're a boy or a girl today, or are 72 things in between? And yet you look at China. They're like serious. They're like preparing for war. You look at other countries and they're like serious. And so America, we're kids will waste half their life just to find out what sex they are. Those are their most productive years when they could be doing something. And so, so there's a weakening going on. And then you add to that debt. So America is the most in debt nation that planet Earth has ever seen. And like I mentioned, debt is fat to the body politic. So what's fat? That's where you splurge and eat something you shouldn't. And then you have to carry that around every day and keep it alive, those fat cells. They're not brain cells. They're not muscle cells. They don't add anything to you. They're just a drain that you have to carry around. And so what's debt? That's where you splurge and spend money you shouldn't. And then you got to pay interest on it. And it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger. It's not adding to you. It's so.
All right. Well, I'm going to jump down a few chapters now to chapter 14. A despot uses fear. And we are definitely in a fearful society today. I'm still seeing people driving down the highway in an automobile, windows rolled up, air conditioner on, and wearing a mask. Nothing but fear.
Yeah. So the democracies and republics are taking power of a king, giving it to the people. If the king wants the power back, he can take it in times of fear or in times of free stuff. And so I spend quite a bit in the book describing how you get people into fear. And you have to create an atmosphere of insecurity, of discord. And so you look at the name devil in Greek, it means diabolos, which means to divide. And so you have to bring division, you have to bring discord to bring about an atmosphere of fear. And so the devil sowed discord in heaven, all right? He got kicked out. And then he sows discord in the garden with Adam blaming Eve and Cain killing Abel. But then he sows discord in ancient Israel. I found this illustration. After Gideon defeated the Midianites, 100,000 of them, there was no threat to Israel. But Gideon has an illegitimate son named Abimelech, who wants power. And so Abimelech goes to the town of Shechem, and he engages in critical race theory, identity race politics. He sows discord. He tells the people, is it better for you that all the sons of Gideon reign over you? Remember also that I am your bone and your flesh. And the men of Shechem spake of him and said, their hearts inclined to follow Abimelech, for they said, he is our brother. So they're getting behind him because he's their bone and their flesh and their brother. It doesn't matter if he knows how to rule or not. Then they go to the city treasury and they take money to hire protesters and rioters, Antifa, BLM type people.
Right.
To do what? To commit violence. And they gave him 70 pieces of silver out of the house of Baal-berith, wherewith Abimelech hired vain and worthless persons which followed him. And they went into his father's house at Ophrah and slew his brethren. And then the men of Shechem made Abimelech king. And so here you have a country completely at peace. Somebody wants power, goes in there and sows division. And once there's violence and confusion, that's when he seizes power. Now, Israel's republic would have ended here rather than a century later with King Saul, had not someone threw a millstone over the wall and it killed Abimelech. But then I fast forward to Machiavelli, and you know, if you want, I can talk about him.
Well, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors again, and then we can come back and pick up there.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, We love our readers, and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Again, our guest speaker today, William J. Federer, and he's an outstanding author, folks. He's got a book, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present, and that's what we're talking about today. He's got other books also, America's God and Country, which is an encyclopedia of quotations. It's over 800 pages of quotes from our founding fathers and other historical figures, and it explains to you exactly how God was involved in the founding of this country. And Believe is an inspiring devotional of scriptures and quotations that he has. These are three books that I picked up at his speech the other night, but he's got a whole list of them on his website, AmericanMinute.com. He's been publishing for quite a while and has a ton of stuff up there. So visit AmericanMinute.com and get a hold of this. I really recommend, if you buy the hardcover book or paperback, you'll also get access to a ebook. He'll email you a copy of a link for the ebook, which makes it really easy to go through. All right, Bill, you were going, I forgot where we left off.
Yeah, well, I was talking about Machiavelli,
right,
creating crises. I did want to throw in something about the church, because people say, wasn't the early church socialist? You know, Acts 4, they all held everything in common. And my response is no, the early church was the early church. Socialism is counterfeit early church. And the difference is between the word voluntary and involuntary. So the early believers voluntarily sold their property and laid the money at the feet of the church to distribute. They didn't have the government take away their property and lay it at the feet of Pilate for the Roman government to redistribute. And when you look at it, when the children of Israel went into the promised land, every family was given land. Every family was given property. If you own property, you can accumulate stuff. The Bible called that being blessed. Karl Marx called it being a capitalist. And then you can give away some of your stuff. The Bible called that charity. Lenin said socialism is a transition phase to communism, and Karl Marx said communism can be summed up in one sentence: abolition of private property. So if you don't own anything, how can you be charitable? How can you give away what you don't have? Oh, so God entrusts you with stuff and then gives you opportunities to show on the outside the love of God that's on the inside. So I think that's important, because some people say, well, they owned everything in common. It's like, yeah, it was voluntary. Voluntary versus involuntary are sort of a big deal with God. It's sort of like the whole reason he made us. Everything else that he created follows rules or instincts. Man has a free will, and we get to choose and express and ourselves either loving God or rejecting God. It's a free choice. And so he's not into the government forcing anybody to do anything. Roger Williams, that founded Rhode Island, said enforced uniformity of religion by the state is the greatest occasion of persecution of the followers of Christ. And so this is another part that I talk about in the book that I think people have been confused over. And that's, in the Bible, God gives commands to five groups: individuals, families, business, church, and government. The individuals, among other things, are commanded to take care of the poor. You know, remember, I was sick and you visited me, and, you know, when, Lord, were you naked and I clothed you? And so that's individuals. The family commands are mostly relational. Husbands, love your wives. Children, submit to your parents. Business commands are things like do an honest day's work. Don't hold back wages. The church immediately began to take care of the poor, right? And feed the orphans and the widows. And through the centuries, it was the churches that started hospitals and medical clinics and universities and took care of immigrants. And the church did all that. Do you know there's no command for the government to take care of the poor? The command to the government is the shortest. Protect the innocent, punish the guilty. There's no command for the government to be involved in education. There's no command for the government to be involved in healthcare. What's happened is the government has usurped the church's role, and we've let them. You know, James Madison, that wrote the, helped write the Constitution, he said, charity is no part of the legislative duty of the government. Davy Crockett, a congressman from Tennessee that later died in the Alamo, there was a fire in D.C. and Congress was going to vote to take the federal tax money to help rebuild Georgetown. And Davy Crockett said, Congress does not have the power to appropriate this money as an act of charity. Every member on this floor knows it. We have the right as individuals to give away as much of our own money as we please in charity. But as members of Congress, we have no right to appropriate a dollar of public money as charity. I love the quote from Calvin Coolidge. He says, it does not follow that because something ought to be done, the national government ought to do it. We need to take care of the poor. Yes, we do, but it's not the government's job. We need to take care of the immigrants. Yes, we do, but it's not the government's job. We need to take care of the single moms and all that stuff. Yeah, but it's not the government's job. It's the individuals and the churches.
Right.
Historically, it was individuals would take care of family members, you know, that were immigrating from other countries. They'd take care, the extended family would take care of a mom with a child, and the church would step up and help. You know, Gerald Ford said, people say, why don't you expand that program and spend more federal money? I look them in the eye and say, do you realize a government big enough to give us everything we want is a government big enough to take away from us everything we have?
Absolutely.
So one of the illustrations I use is, what if older fish could tell younger fish to stay away from shiny things dangling in the water? But they can't. So every new generation of younger fish sees that shiny thing and they're attracted to it and caught, right? A hook. Socialism is a shiny thing dangling in the water. Free food, free clothes, free education, free welfare. Free is attractive, but there's a hook there. You're giving up control of your life to the government. And so that is the back door. So you have the freedom is when you take the power of the government, give it to the people in democracies and republics. But when people get afraid, they will trade freedom for security and power reconcentrates. Or if they get lazy and they get dependent on free stuff, then they incrementally. And so that's what they call the Great Reset. So it's an orchestrated financial collapse in the world to cause everybody to go to their governments and say, help. And the government says, okay, we'll help. Here's a new digital currency that we can track you and we can program it so it won't work if you want to buy guns or ammunition, or we can turn it off if your ESG, your environmentally friendly, socially woke governance score is not high enough, and we can control people. But if they just implemented it, people would scream. But they need a crisis to be able to say, here, we're going to come along and fix it. But so that's the fear side. So you have to get people into fear. And when they're totally afraid, then they'll give up their freedom to restore, their security to their life. And the other's free stuff. You should get them to be dependent on the government. And then they'll give up their freedom to continue the free stuff.
Right. And you brought out a really good point about them shutting you off, folks. If you don't realize, with all the technology you have today, your light meters, just about everything is controlled remotely. And they can shut your power off. They can shut your phone off. They can, you know, they can pretty much shut you down in a heartbeat. So
in new cars, they
yeah, new cars.
That within the next 5 years or so, that all new cars that, you know, how you have the OnStar, the GPS,
right?
That, you know, that, well, that means that your car is accessing the internet. And so they want to be able to have a switch so that they can get inside of your computer in your car and turn off your car anytime they want.
Right. Right. And a lot of this, the way they present it to you sounds really good. It's for your safety. There's things, you know, they're doing all these things for your convenience and your safety. And technology is wonderful when it's used for good. But when evil comes in and takes over the technology, you're in trouble.
Yeah, a fence keeps the bad guys and the wild animals out. But wait a second, the fence can also be locked to keep you inside and keep you a prisoner.
Right.
Sort of the way technology is.
Right.
And so that's why. So,
Bill,
big switch.
We need to take another break real quick. Hate to interrupt you, but we're going to take this third and final break, and we'll be right back with Bill Federer. Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think East 70 Palm. They've been on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory, come for the thoughtful advice. E70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
How would you like to buy a present, be inspired, and have your spirits lifted? It's easy. Just visit Carolina Creations at 317 Pollock Street in downtown New Bern. You'll find an amazing array of gallery-worthy paintings, one-of-a-kind jewelry, pottery, glassware, greeting cards, personal adornments, and all sorts of temptations. Everything is displayed to please the eye. Prices run the gamut from a few dollars to a few thousand dollars. Many items are by local artists and artisans. Carolina Creations has been voted Best Gallery, Best Gift Shop, and Best Jewelry Store by the Sun Journal's readers. Stop in and see why. The friendly, knowledgeable staff will let you browse to your heart's content or swing into helpful mode if that's needed. You'll enjoy a visit to Carolina Creations. That's a promise.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Again, William J. Federer is our guest speaker. And Bill, tell us this road from where we're at down to socialism. How do we get there?
Right. So with the Pilgrims, they got rid of their company bylaw system and they moved to a voluntary system where everybody had their own plot of land and they would grow it and then be moved upon with charity to take care of their neighbor. And so if you think of it, the Pilgrims called it a covenant. That's where it's the Mayflower Compact. The word compact means covenant. What's a covenant? It goes back to ancient Israel. And it's like a triangle. You get rights and blessings from God, and you voluntarily take care of your neighbor because you're accountable to God. Well, the century after the Pilgrims, covenant turned into social contract, and God became distant. And this sort of came out of the scientific revolution, right? The Age of Enlightenment, where you'd had Kepler discovering laws of planetary motion and Isaac Newton discovering laws of gravity and laws of optics. And you had Robert Boyle discovering laws of pressure. And so some theologians said, well, gee, maybe God made everything with laws. And like a guy makes a complicated clock and winds it up and then goes for a walk. God made everything, but he's not involved. He's distant. And so you go from the Pilgrim Covenant, where you get rights and blessings from a God that's personal, and you're taking care of your neighbor because you're accountable to him, to this Age of Enlightenment where, God made everything, but he's not involved. Don't even bother praying because everything's following these laws. But the century after the Age of Enlightenment, you have the French Revolution, and that's a social contract with no God. So we go from personal God to distant God to no God. So the French Revolution, you get your rights from the group and you're accountable to the group. And then the next century, you have Marxism and socialism, where the state is God, the group is God. And so the Hegel, who was a German philosopher, says the state is God walking on earth. The state is our mortal God. All the worth which the human being possesses, he possesses only through the state. The state's not limited by abstract rules of good and bad. You mean like the Ten Commandments? Yeah, it's just a power grab by the state. And if you help the state get more powerful, then your life is worth something. And if you challenge the state, then you're a nuisance that the state can crush. And anyway, so it basically, you transition from covenant to socialism by going from a personal God to no God. And then your rights don't come from a creator. So the founders in America, their idea was your rights come from a creator. The government's purpose is to guarantee to you your creator-given rights. Well, if there is no creator, where do your rights come from? Oh, the group. Oh, well, what if the group thinks that you're costing more than you're worth, then they can pull the plug on you, and the group becomes God. And so this is what was instituted beginning with the French Revolution. So we had a revolution. The French helped us, and in return, the French got nothing but debt. And then the next year, their crops failed. And then the people in France said, if we can just chop off the king and queen's heads, then our problems will be solved. Well, they chop it off. It doesn't get any better. So they chop off the heads of all the royalty. It doesn't get any better. They chop off the heads of all the wealthy. You have money. We don't. You're selfish. Then they chop off the heads of all the farmers. You got food and supplies. We don't. You're selfish. And then they chop off the heads of the hoarders. You got extra food in your house and we don't have enough. You're selfish. Then they chopped off the heads of the clergy because they're speaking out against the head chopping off stuff.
Yeah.
Then they chopped off the heads of the former revolutionaries, the ones that used to chop off heads but got tired of it. Somehow they're to blame. 30,000 people had their heads chopped off in Paris, France during their French Revolution. And the motto of the French Revolution is liberty, equality, fraternity. Now, liberty is experienced individually. Fraternity is their word for socialism. The fraternity, the club, the group, the collective, the state, the mob. And equality can be understood two ways. In America, it was equal treatment before the law. In France, it was everyone having an equal amount of stuff. And if the fraternity, the group, the collective, the mob, the state thinks you have too much stuff, it can crush your individual liberty, confiscate all your stuff and redistribute it, and kill you. And so that became the model for every socialist revolution since. You kill off the old order, the people that just refuse to go along, and then the state takes all the property and all the supplies and all everything, and the state redistributes it. The problem is the state is run by people, and they're always going to be tempted to funnel a little extra to their family and friends on the side. Like Nancy Pelosi, where she does insider trading, right? And she has the government give a contract to some company that her husband owns stock in, and anybody else did that, they'd go to jail for it. But she's like on the inside, so she gets to do that. She gets to have her hair styled in San Francisco when all the other hairstylist shops are shut down. And so she gets to be, and so that's what happens where you have the socialism. There's always a ruling class, and they pass that. They decide who gets what. Whoever controls the purse strings has the power, is the saying. But the French Revolution is this model for that, and they want to get rid of Christianity and the Bible. Why? Because the Bible emphasizes the individual, that you individually are made in the image of God. And this God is not a respecter of persons. Everyone's treated the same. And God blesses you. They don't want that. They want you having a worth from the state, and that everything's owned by the state, and the state can give, the state can take away. So,
right. There's so much here, folks. I hope you understand that this didn't just happen overnight. This has been going on for decades, generation after generation, and they're proud of it. They've told us ahead of time what they were going to do. If you haven't read Rules for Radicals by Saul Alinsky, it's got a roadmap there of everything that Bill's been explaining, how they were going to accomplish that here in America. And they've been chipping away at it and chipping away at it. And now all of a sudden we wake up one morning and we are right on the edge of socialism. So you need to be informed.
Now, I quote Rules for Radicals in my book, and I explain how the idea of creating a crisis so that people will want your answer. I go to Machiavelli 500 years ago. He lived in Italy, a bunch of city states that always fought. Machiavelli thought if one prince could control them all, it would stop the infighting. And so if the prince conquers the city, they would hate him. But if the prince pays criminals to kill cows and burn barns and create Antifa riots, the people will cry out for help. The prince will come in and get rid of the very criminals he paid, send them to another city or something. And then the people would praise the prince as a hero. So it's good marketing. You create the need and fill it. You go around the back of the house and set it on fire. You go around the front of the house and sell them a fire extinguisher. Right? You go around the back of the house, instigate riots, and then you go around the front of the house and say, we'll restore order. You go to the back of the house and destabilize the economy. Then you come around the front of the house and say, hey, just let the government take over with a digital currency and we'll restore order. And so this pattern is seen over and over again. I go through how the British took over India this way. They came in and they stirred up animosity between different kingdoms. And then when they fought each other, the British came in to restore order and they would conquer both. And they did this again and again until they took over India. And then it was Hegel that put it into an equation in Germany, and he taught Karl Marx. So a thesis, antithesis, synthesis, three corners of a triangle. The first corner is the thesis, the status quo. You have to create an antithesis. You have to create discord. You have to create a crisis so people panic and fear. And then they settle for a synthesis, which is the top corner of the triangle. And then they repeat it, and they create another problem. It's real bad, and everybody gives up some freedoms to settle for an answer that's half as bad. Then they create another problem that's real bad, and everybody settles for an answer and give up some freedom to settle for half as bad. And they keep doing this until all the power is taken away from the individual and put into the hands of the state. And so Karl Marx says, how do you create a problem that's real bad? You send in agitators, agent provocateurs, community organizers, labor organizers. Their job is to find people with grievances, stir them up to riot, pit one against the other. It's sort of like a house divided against itself cannot stand, is what Jesus said. And it's like introducing an autoimmune disease into the body politic. What's an autoimmune disease? It's where your own immune system starts attacking your own organs. You got a war going on the inside. So patriotism is the enemy. You get people to identify with subgroups and pit the subgroups against each other.
And we're seeing that today.
Yeah. I mean, even FDR said, remember the Nazi technique, pit race against race, divide and conquer. And
all those things are playing out in the streets of America. Remember January 6th? Folks, we've got our own American citizens rotting in jails with no charges. So we've come down a dark path here. Well, Bill, we've got about a minute left here. How about tell us about your website and how people can get more information and access to your materials?
Well, thank you, Rick. My website is AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. And the book we talked about is called Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. And the subtitle is How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. And then I send out a daily email, a history email, that people can sign up for. And I tell people history is not prophetic, but it is predictive. Past behavior is the best indicator of future performance. And so you see how things happened in the past. It gives you a trajectory, an idea of where things are headed in the future. So it's sort of helpful.
And Bill, if some organizations might be listening in and are interested in getting you in for a speaker at an event, how would they go about doing that?
Sure. Yeah. My contact is on the website, AmericanMinute.com, and they can email or call me. And I travel every week somewhere and would be happy to come to whatever area that people are listening and speak for them. So,
well, I can witness that it will be of great value to you and every bit of it worth your time and your money to go and see this gentleman in person. He is an outstanding patriot, and I'm going to leave you with a quote out of another one of his books here. You might ask yourselves, okay, you've told us where we're at, how we got there. How do we get out of it? And I'm going to quote General Ulysses S. Grant stated, "I believe in the Holy Scriptures, and whoso lives by them will be benefited thereby. And men may differ as to the interpretation, which is human, but the Scriptures are man's best guide." And folks, that's how we get out of it. It's the only way out of it. Turn back to God. Put him back in control, put him back in charge, put him back in the family, back in the home, back in the schools, back in the church where he belongs. That's the only way to turn this stuff around and get back on track. Well, that's all the time we have for today's show. Once again, Bill, we thank you for joining us, and we hope to be with you again in the future. Folks, come back and be with us again next week.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. Jay Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.